This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it. I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
So, Anthony, tell us a little about yourself.
That's funny. Well, I am the president right now of the Jeffrey Gittimer Fan Club.
Oh, cool. Aww. You know, that is a very difficult position to uphold.
I thought I was the president.
Well, you are, but like fist fights, all kinds of people want to be president of my fan club.
You and our members.
Yeah.
Both of us.
Yeah, all the members want to be president.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the premier podcast in the world on sales, personal development, positive attitude. This is Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute.
Cool. So, Jen, we're on Sell or Die today, and this is like a big deal today.
We're on Sell or Die every day.
My buddy Anthony Iannarino is our guest of honor today.
This is a big deal. Anthony knows his stuff, and he freaking rocks.
He's smart. He's funny. But he's not as smart or funny as we are. Oh, sorry, Anthony. Then there you go. But he has his new book is called Eat Their Lunch, Winning Customers Away from Your Competition. In other words, kicking butt in the marketplace. And winbacks are huge in the moral and immoral world. Winbacks are huge in the feeling of salespeople's, it invigorates the team and it demoralizes your competitor when you win a customer away from them. That's the whole deal.
You just got a ding. That's pretty impressive.
Well, you know, I'm a ding kind of a guy. So what's up with you, Jenny?
Well, we're going to get to Anthony's interview in a few minutes and yeah. It's awesome.
Let's talk about Philly and why we're the greatest city in the world.
Well, technically, when you hear this episode, you guys will be in Dallas.
Oh,
and if you haven't gotten a ticket, it's already too late. More importantly, there's only one more Gittimer public event left in Atlanta in November.
That's right.
So get your butt to
and
the
– people are flying in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vote and then go to the Atlanta seminar.
So let's read a five-star review. What do you think?
I think you should do it, Jen.
All right. Joe writes, substance, ideas, no BS. Innovative guests that have walked a mile in your shoes in search of sales.
Ooh.
Most podcasts.
That's pretty damn good, by the way.
I know. Most podcasts lose me after 2 minutes of crap. Jeffrey and Jennifer supplement their seminars and books with ideas you can turn into money. Thanks, Jeffrey and Jen.
Wow.
Thank you, Joe.
Most podcasts lose me after 3 minutes. With you, I go 4 minutes.
Oh, man. No, that's freaking awesome. Thank you, Joe. We love your five-star reviews. So if you could, listen, we do this because we love it. We do this because we're having a great time. We want to help you. But we also love reading those reviews. So if you could, please give us a five-star review. It'll help other people find us as well. And it will help us get better guests.
Affirm us and do it in a nice way. Thank you very kindly, you diehard Jew. This is what I want you to do. Go out and make a freaking sale today. And then come back and say we had just a little bit to do with it, that we incentivized you, that we kicked your ass out to that customer and you felt so damn good that you couldn't stand it. I'm going to share something, if I may.
Okay, do it.
Do you have the story music? in 1977, I bought Dennis Waitley's winning set of tapes. I was living in Indianapolis, driving to Chicago. I listened to the entire series in the car on my way. I actually listened to the last half of the last tape when I was in the parking lot where I was going. And I walked into the building with my consulting contract, which at the time was $25,000. I walked past the front office. I just said, I'm going to Mel's office. I walked past his secretary, opened up the door. There were a bunch of people in the room. I put the contract on his desk and I said, can you please sign this so I can go to work? And he did. And I attribute it 100% to the motivation that I had at the moment of motivation. And I luckily, not only did that happen, but years later, I got to thank Dennis Waitley personally face to face.
Wow, that's really cool. So, well, I hope we are inspiring you guys in the same exact way. But Jeffrey, I have a question from that story. Did you displace your competition to get that contract?
Actually, I don't know if I had competition or not. Didn't really give a shit.
Well, all right. If you did, Anthony and Reno could have helped.
Oh, exactly. I actually can take that further.
Yeah.
During my consulting time there that week, the head of sales, and this is a textile screen printing company, head of sales came to me and said, look, this isn't a challenge or anything, but there's a local guy here in Chicago who bought our competitor's machine. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could call him up and find out why. I said, okay, fine. So I called the guy up on the phone, and after an hour, I got him to ask for his deposit back from the competitor and buy our machine.
Way to go.
Is that cool or what?
Way to go. It's not a challenge or anything means it's totally a challenge.
Oh, yeah, totally. And after that, no one ever challenged me again.
Oh, my God, I love that.
It is totally cool. I can take the story further, but I'm going to wait for a little while.
All right. Why don't you do it at your Atlanta seminar so that when people come in person, they can actually hear the ending.
Yeah, the ending is when I went to a client, I said, call two people, my customer and the competitor. And I'll tell you how the story ends when I get there.
There you go. All right. So let's get to our guest, Mr. Anthony Enorino.
Come on, talk to him a little bit. I already know everything. You can tell.
All right. Well, Anthony believes in displacing your competition by not being cutthroat, but by giving greater value than your competition does. And he's going to explain why adapting your hiring and training processes can be the key to displacing your competition. Come on, guys. I know you all have competition.
Okay? Displacing is a Midwestern word.
Well, you know what? I'm trying
beating
to be nice here.
Beating the shit out of somebody. That's now you're talking New York and New Jersey.
I'm trying to be nice here, okay? I'm trying to be nice
let's
here.
Displace the competition.
Yeah, let's.
I don't want to displace the competition. I want to kill them. Go ahead.
All right. And there's one more thing. Anthony's going to reveal that you can get in on your competition's business, but you just don't know it yet. So some of you are afraid to go after your competitor's business.
Please.
Some of you feel like you can't do it, and he's going to tell you how.
So ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome the great Anthony Enorino. You have this book coming out. This would be your fourth book?
Third
book?
Way to go.
Third book in 2 years.
Wow.
Yes, you're becoming very prolific. Is it because you write on Sundays?
It's because I write every day. Don't you write every day?
Yeah, of course I do.
Do you wake up and write? When do you write normally?
I wake up and write. And that's, for me, the best way to do it. It feels like I have a clean slate to start with. I don't have all of the joy that the world does in your ears to sort of take your psychogram for writing.
So I have a crazy question about this. Do you wake up and look at stuff on your phone and then write, or do you immediately go to writing?
No, I look at anything before I write. I don't want to look at Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, email, and that stuff. So what I do is I get up, I walk into the kitchen where the coffee machine has already gone off about 10 minutes before I get up. And I walk past the dogs, I get a giant cup of coffee, and then I come into the office writing first thing.
Cool.
So you have a home office?
I do. And no one wants your time at 5 in the morning.
No, they're sleeping.
Yeah, I think that there's an ability for us as writers to understand what it takes to write intuitively. You know your best time. Why would you fritter it away with something stupid?
I can write anytime and anywhere like you can. So I've written of Ether. I know I wrote 20,000 words on airplanes. I know that for a fact because I use a software program called Ulysses, and it tells me how many words I wrote.
Wait, a software program called what?
Ulysses.
Ulysses, oh yeah.
It's for the Mac, and it's just a text editor. There's no formatting, so you just type words. That's and all I ever want to see on a page is just words. I don't want to bold things or do anything like that. So I just worry about the word. And I know for a fact 20,000 out of 65,000 were written on airplanes and headphones on, and it's early in the morning taking a flight type of words.
That's
just
cool.
Just from an audience perspective, I use Dragon for Mac, and I dictate almost everything. That's why I can wake up in the morning and I can just talk to myself. And I can do 5,000 words before other people have gotten up to get their first cup of coffee.
How does it handle all the F-bombs and all the curse words that
you
use?
You know what? It knows me.
It's got those.
Exactly. It knows me. So does my iPhone. It knows me there as well. I dropped an F-bomb into one yesterday.
Dragon is a very good, it's a very good tool. I have Dragon anywhere on the if I'm driving or something and I want to remember something that I want to write, mm-hmm. I'll dictate straight. It's a really good job.
Tell us about your new book.
Okay, this is book three, and I put them in a certain order. So the first book was The Only Sales Guide, which is basically a competency model. As you know, as well as anyone on earth, both of you, it's mindset and skill set. And if you forget about the mindset part, people struggle. So I wrote that book first. The second book was The Lost Closing. And I wrote that book because closing is now a bad word. And I tried to give people some understanding of, look, you have to ask people for a lot of commitments. I need their time. I need them to explore change. I need them to create. I need them to let other stakeholders in for consensus and all that kind of stuff. So that's how do you become consultative and really control the process, because you have to do that now. And now the third book is something on all of this. It's how do you displace your competitor? And this is what most do. And it's interesting. Behind me on this shelf is both of the Blue Ocean books, Blue Ocean Strategy, Ocean Shift. And I love the idea of being Netflix and eliminating all competition. Most people who would buy a book from any of the three of us have competitors that already have the accounts that they want. And they have to go and take business away from someone else in order to win new business, number one. And how do you grow at 12% if the market's growing by 3%? You're not going to do that by waiting until that Netflix idea. You've got to go and work in the red ocean. So this is basically, this book is a red ocean strategy where there's lots of sharks, there's a lot of blood in the water, and you better have a dorsal fin and a lot of teeth, because you have to go and remove competitors in order to grow your hips.
So the title, Eat Their Lunch, makes it sound like you have to be an asshole in some sense to...
Jen, you've hit the nail on the head.
to take over. And so talk to us about your thinking on this. Do you have to be an asshole?
How did you become an asshole in Columbus, Ohio?
No, but...
Well, you don't have to. You just can make a choice and decide what you want to be. The interesting thing about that is that there's all these concepts and ideas around competition being cutthroat. And I actually say, like, if you're a mafia, Don, you're misunderstanding competition. You're not trying to kill your competitors. You're trying to displace them by creating greater value. So what happens now is most people want in, they say, let me tell you about my storied history. And, now let me tell you about all the logos that we've won. Let me tell you about our products. That's not going to start a displacement because there's no value for the customer there. So you have to come in and say, let me tell you about the four trends that are going to impact your business over the next 24 months. Let me tell you about some of the questions we're challenging ourselves and our clients with and some of the decisions that we're making. And even if there's not a next step for us, you're going to have some different questions that you ask your team. So you have to start with a higher level of value than product or service or solution. And the displacement starts when you give people a new lens to look through. Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to decide, I'm going to undercut their price, because most people aren't going to switch for a few pennies. They're not going to fire people they've done business with for a long time. They're going to switch because you're going to help them drive their business into the future a future that your competitor isn't capable of seeing or isn't capable of selling to them, one or the other.
One of the things that I learned about we're satisfied with who we're dealing with right now, which is the first level of displacement. I tell them that they're satisfied because they only know what they know. And there's a ton more of new information. And if you'll let me share some of that information with you, if you think there's a better play, let me know. And if you think there's not a better play, let me know and I'll leave. But at least give me a shot at it. You can't just sit there. And some people won't always do what's best for their company. They'll do what's best for them.
So, Anthony, how do you recommend that our diehards overcome that when they hear
I'm satisfied.
I'm already working with someone and I'm satisfied with them. Or they see that the potential customer has a relationship and it would be hard to displace the competition.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. I think, Jeffrey, you hit it just straight on the head. I mean, I have to say there's new information available. There are things that are going to impact your business over the next 18 to 24 months that are worth your time and attention. So what I'd like to ask you for is an opportunity to explore it and see if any of these make sense for you where you are now and get a deeper understanding if there's something else that we should be doing here together or not. And you're leaving the power in their hands. Like you just said, that they decide whether it makes sense or not, right? And for most of us, the second chapter of the book is on how you actually come up with these trends to talk about this. I came out of temporary staffing, so I still have family businesses that are temporary staffing, and I know a lot of things. I know more than anyone I'm ever in a room with in that particular world. I know that there's 11,000 baby boomers that retire every day. That is 4.3 million a year or 358,000 a month. I know that the economy created something like 200,000 jobs, which means there's a deficit of 158,000. I also know that if you're going to replace people that have 20 years experience, you're likely going to get somebody who's got a man bun and a lumberjack-like beard that they're going to be ashamed of in pictures in the next 10 years as they try to find a spouse and have babies and pay for colleges and all those things. And you're not going to find that talent. You're going to have to start building that talent, and you're going to get a different workforce than the one that you've had. And so I have an insight that I can share. I have a view of the world that I can share where I'm literally trying to swap out the lens that they have and give them a different and a better lens so they can go, you know, holy criminy, I didn't know that there were that many retiring, and I don't know where we're going to get the talent or how we're supposed to do that. Now we can start talking about what are some of the strategies, what are your plans to do that. How could you think about this in a way that lets you survive and thrive in this kind of a labor economy? But this can be applied to any business. You know, it's the idea of what insights do you have and why should they change? Why should they look at the world through a different lens that you're providing them?
Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
I think that you might want to look at the word lens and substitute occasionally for other words that are more definitive in terms of what they see, like a different picture book or a different financial statement or a different outcome. But one of the things that's funny to me is a guy comes in and he's a copier sales guy and he wants to talk to somebody who makes the decisions about copiers. And I can just picture the boss going, copier? I've never heard of that before. How does it work? Yeah. You know, so they already know. They know everything. I tell salespeople, email your pitch the day before you give it and go in and focus for 1 hour on how the customer wins and how they make more money as a result of what you're doing. And I feel certain that your book follows that path.
It's the strategic outcome that they're after. They don't care about the product, and they don't care about your company's history.
There was they don't care about you.
Yeah. True. And there was a Harvard professor, Theodore Levitt, who said people don't buy drills, they buy quarter-inch holes. Mm-hmm. And if they could have the holes without the drill, they wouldn't buy your drill.
Mm-hmm. Find out when he said it. I might have said it first.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jeffrey says that.
68, I think, something like that.
I don't know.
You were born then?
In 68.
Were you born then?
Are you kidding me? I had already dropped out of college.
Oh.
But I think you're right. And if you're going to decide that I need words other than lens, like, you need to start working with me on these books a lot sooner than now.
I don't have editing privilege. Right now, I don't have editing privilege. If you give me that, my fee is very low.
No, it's not. I've spoken to you. I know it.
All right. My fee is very high, but look how worth it would be.
So how do you even gain access to the person, though? So like,
oh, come on.
No, hold on. I want to hear Anthony's take on this. Okay. I have a relationship with someone and you're trying to sell to me. I don't even want to talk to you. And this happens all the time to our diehards. You know, they're trying to get in with someone, but it's my relationship, my vendor is my brother's girlfriend's friend.
Goldfish.
Okay. And so I don't even want to talk to you. So how do you approach that?
I think you do want to talk to me, though.
Oh, yeah.
Even though you may not know it, but
okay,
you do.
So I may not know it.
Yeah, but I have to make sure you know that there's a reason to talk to me. A couple chapters in the book are about something, Jen, that I know you believe in the same way that I do, which is a professional persistence and not giving up and not going away. And even being 15 years old and rejecting the refusal from Cutco and deciding you're going to sell for them anyway. So a lot of it is grit, but some of it is, when we make a call, we have to tell somebody why we're asking for their time, and we have to trade enough value to deserve that time in the first place. So when I say something that sounds like, Jen, love to stop by, introduce myself and my company, tell you what we're doing to help other people in your industry, and then ask you some questions so I can better understand your position. They're like, okay, so let's get the value prop. You're going to talk about you. That sucks for me. And your company, not interested. And all the other people that look like me that you serve with all your logos don't really care. And then you're going to ask me what's keeping me up at night. I've already done this. I know there's no value.
What does keep you up at night? I don't know.
Coffee, mostly.
Yeah, answer. None of your business is what the answer is. But keep going.
But if I say something like, Jen, I want to ask you for 20 minutes where I can share an executive briefing with you on the trends that are going to impact your business the most over the next 18 to 24 months, some of the questions that you're going to challenge your management team with, and some of the questions that we're answering with our clients. And listen, even if there's not a next step, I'm going to leave you with a deck and I'm going to leave you with a set of questions, and you're going to make different decisions whether you make them with us or with your current provider. But either way, these changes are going to have an impact on your business without you doing something different. And I'm going to leave that, if I don't get them on the phone, I'm leaving that on the voicemail, and then I'm following it up with an email, and I'm never asking the person to call me back because they don't care and they're not going to call me back. So I'm going to call again the following week, and I'm going to leave another voicemail and another email. And I'm going to do that about 4 weeks in a row. And I'll probably sprinkle in a LinkedIn in mail where I ask for a connection, probably send a blog post. I'm going to have a 9-touch pursuit plan over 13 weeks, where I'm going to be super persistent. And in my experience doing this, I'm going to get about 40% of people to get two-way communication with me. Now, some of them will be
lost, right?
Exactly. Some of them will, but okay, so you know where you are and you might find another stakeholder to start pursuing. But some of them are going to be, what are these trends? What are you talking about? Right. And if you have something where you can say, listen, this is what's going on in the world that we're concerned about, but the best way for us to do this is for you to give me 20 minutes and let's walk through it together, even if there's no next step. So that's the way that it works now. And I know that there are still people who can get an appointment saying, let me stop by and introduce myself and ask you what's keeping you up at night. But that's been used for so long now, it's just lost its effectiveness.
Horrible. Yeah, people try to enter all the time with their product or service, or even sometimes their results. And it sounds like what you're saying is they need to be way more strategic about how they're going to help them and the value, and bring that value on the first meeting, not just talk about what value they can bring. Bring it.
Well, some of this is to something that Jeffrey's been talking about a lot lately, and it's about the pain. So we start this assumption with they have pain. Well, maybe they do, but they've learned to live with it and without you for a long time. Mm-hmm. So when you come in with that approach, you're like, I'm going to find the pain. They're like, yeah, it sucks, but the last people we had before them, they sucked too, and you'll probably suck as well.
Like your dry cleaner.
Right, I'm going to live with this. Right. So, you know, no, you have to have something better than this.
I like our dry cleaner.
I would challenge you that my pain is none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I might tell my doctor where it hurts because I already have a trusted relationship with him or her, but I'm certainly not going to tell some sales guy coming off the street where it hurts. Like, dude, where do you hurt? What's your mortgage payment? Okay, but let me throw something at you that I think you'll use in your seminars forever. So I'm going to give it away. Mr. Jones, this is about eating their lunch. Mr. Jones, most people who have a, and you can substitute anything, life insurance policy, copier, truck, any product or service, accounting service, pretty much know what's now. But in the world of business, you need to know three things. What's now, what's new, and what's next. And my challenge to you, Mr. Jones, is you may know what's now, but you may not know what's new and what's next. And that's why I'd like my 20 minutes.
I love that. You have a way with words.
Well,
you should be a writer or something, Jeff.
I should move to New York City and tell people.
I can't wait till people see your blurb on the book. I can't wait.
Yeah, neither can I.
The blurb is better than the book.
Is it on there?
It's not on the galley copy, but it's so good and it's beautiful.
What is it? Come on, tell us.
Basically, what it says is you need to put your competitor in their place, second place.
Right.
It's so good.
I love that.
Classic Gittimer. It's just classic.
Cool.
So normally, I sell those for $2,500. So I just want you to know that you have a cosmic debt built up.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me I was expecting an invoice.
No invoice. But your book is the right strategy. 74%, which is my number, of people that you call on already own a similar product.
Right.
And the number's probably higher, but I like to use 74% because it's a bullshit number.
Well, it seems like with the internet, the market for almost everything people sell has become so much more crowded and so much more difficult to penetrate.
Oh, but it's also more available 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, when you go to Barnes & Noble, you prime it. You know, you at least look it up. You can look it up by the barcode now.
But we love Barnes & Noble. So if you're there, just buy the book there.
Yeah, exactly. But I want immediate gratification. I will admit to spending tons of money in Barnes & Noble. But the bottom line is you can't help but go to Best Buy or go to any department store and look it up on Amazon. Everyone does. A television, a washing machine, a piece of wood, anything. They sell everything.
The reason that I wrote this book is because I think salespeople need to get their minds around what the implications of that statement are for them. And the implication is, if you're commoditized, behaving like a commodity is going to kill you.
Right.
And the market's really just getting pulled in two different directions, and the middle is getting split apart. And you can either be super transactional, but Amazon's going to crush you if you're super transactional.
Without a doubt.
They transact better than anyone. You can't out-transact them. Or you're going to be super relational, which means I'm going to create so much value for you that it's actually worth giving me your time and spending more money to get the real strategic outcomes you want. But if I show up and I sound like I'm a copy salesperson, I'm going to say, who buys copiers here? I've already said, look, I'm a commodity. Please treat me like one.
Yeah.
Give me an RFP and I'll give you a price quote. But if I come in and say, look, we need to talk about document management. We need to talk about the availability of documents in the future. We need to talk about the structure for having backups and should something happen, you know, what you do and how much goes online and how much goes here. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about how you manage that process. I'm going to talk about how you control the cost. You have to get strategic, because if you're going to buy a copier, I'm going to do that on Amazon.com. In fact, Amazon thinks they're going to put Home Depot and Lowe's out of business. Like, you're going to buy a toilet, look at the picture and order it. We'll send it to you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you this, they're making a dent. But let me throw something at you. If I were a salesperson and I walked into somebody's office thinking that they think that I'm a commodity, I would say, you know, Mr. Jones, a lot of people think that we're becoming commoditized because you can go on Amazon and click buy now, and if you're a one-click buyer, it'll show up here in a couple of days. But let me share two facts with you that do not exist on Amazon. Fact number one, you can call me. Here's my cell. Fact number two, I'm local. And there's a value in both of those things that when you need someone or something, you can put me on speed dial. I will answer your phone or your text in 38 seconds, and you'll have it on its way in 39 seconds. And that's a value.
Super relational. Yeah. The value is I'm now the value proposition. And this is, I think, a tough thing for salespeople to get their mind around over the last couple of decades. You're now the value proposition. So they're like, no, I want the company's history to be the value proposition, right. So I don't have to be very good.
Come on.
Or I want the product to be great, so I don't have to be very good. I want the market to be made for me, and marketing should be generating these leads so that I – Gittimer, you got to love this. Demand generation. Like there's a bunch of people going, Gittimer, you're going to sell me that, and I demand you give me what I want. That doesn't happen. There's no demand.
No.
But this
there's
challenge.
There's a ton of people that look like you, so you have to be better and different.
This challenges the way salespeople and sales teams have been doing things for decades. I mean, salespeople show up to their new job, they get their training, and the first thing they learn is, here's our value proposition. So what you're saying is, sales managers, you need to start teaching people not only what the company can offer, but what the person, the salesperson needs to offer as well. That's huge. That's major.
And if you're a sales leader and you're not teaching your salespeople what's now, what's new, and what's next, they're going to be in a deficit position when they enter that space, and the customer says, "I already have what you're trying to sell me. What's different? What's better? Why should I do this?" They're challenging you with a why, because literally they want to know. They want to know what's now and what's new and what's next.
You got excited there, didn't you?
I thought he was going to hit me at the mic.
I thought I was Italian. I apologize.
I continually tease audiences. You only need two things to be a trusted advisor. The first is trust, and the second is advice.
Yeah,
exactly. And your product isn't advice, and your company's history isn't advice. That's not advice. Advice is advice. And if you don't know how to help somebody get better results, they don't need you. They already know what they know. They need to know what's next and what's new, and what's coming around the corner that I can't see. And if you're not that person, then you're going to struggle in sales now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great definition of trusted advisor, by the way.
So, Anthony, we got to get you here to our
Charlotte,
studio to have a more in-depth, detailed conversation about your book.
I'll make sure we get that on the calendar.
All right, cool.
That
would be awesome.
We want you to pee in our toilet. And that's final.
Listen, I refuse to show up at a Casa de Gittimer unless my book is on your nightstand.
Oh, and that is? Okay. You know, it's what a coincidence that thing was. I'm reading his book, and he comes over, and the book's
and
on my nightstand.
And then he's walking through our bedroom.
He was, exactly. He was going to pee. And
he's like, wait, that's my book.
Oh, my God.
I like it that we haven't said his name. Maybe we'll make sure that we tell the story and leave his name out of it because he doesn't need any more promotion.
Actually, his name is as good as the story that goes with it. It's Jeb Blunt, and we're in an interview one day, and I said, you know, your name doesn't pronounce like it's spelled. I said, how many people call you Blount? And he said, only Yankees.
Not lots surprising. Yeah. Huh? Oh, I'm sure.
Lots
oh,
of them.
I'm
I
sure
hear
there
from
are,
all
yeah,
the time. Like, your friend Jeb Blount. And I'm like, I don't have a friend Jeb Blount.
So, Anthony, let's get back to you. Where can people get more information? Where should they go to buy the book?
The book from Amazon.com right now on pre-order.
Okay.
And later at all the usual bookstores, Barnes & Noble included. For more about me, thesalesblog.com differentiated.
Oh, I mean, very well done, Anthony.
And what's your podcast?
In the Arena.
Okay, cool.
And you can find that on iTunes.
We'll put that all in the show notes.
Yeah, you'll be able to get Anthony Iannarino all times of day in all places of value.
I get your Sunday newsletter. I love it.
Yeah, I just read it today.
Yeah.
I think that
I get a call from Jeffrey on the email. When he disagrees with something, he'll call to let me know.
Only when he disagrees.
I found the emails, by the way. I just forwarded them to you.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I have every email.
That's funny. Classic.
Well, I don't have the thing that triggered it. I don't have that initial sales thing that you were sending out. So
it
maybe
was it was a blog post where I had a whole bunch of people I linked to.
Yeah, was he not one of them?
Yeah, no.
No.
No, of course not. No,
I didn't know him.
No sense in exposing yourself.
Man, I love that.
But find the blog post and then you can paste everything in there, you'll see.
This is so good.
I told people that I told him that I own Sales Blog.
Yeah.
I left off the comma, you bastard.
Oh.
But it was implied.
he saved that until the first time we talked, and then he said, you bastard.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, it's surprising for him to leave that off.
The phone conversations were not recorded, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Anyway, listen, right. I'm very, very proud of you for your new book. You have once again taken a leadership position in how to kick a competitor's ass. And I think that every single sales leader and salesperson would want to own it in order to be able to at least have insight how they can get past that. They're already doing business with somebody else. They said they're satisfied with somebody else.
Thank you. I'm honored and humbled.
Hey, cool. Hard to do.
Well, when it's the great Jeffrey Gittimer, it's rather easy. Aww. Thank you. Oh.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. We'll see you soon. Anthony is a smart guy, and Anthony knows sales. Anthony understands the nuance of what it takes to get someone to buy bigger and more than the salesperson was expecting when they walk in the door. That's what I really like about the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about the two paths that salespeople can go in, either being super transactional, where you're going to lose to Amazon, or being incredibly relational, where you're giving more value than Amazon with your interactions. Now, Amazon is a metaphor now that everyone uses.
Yeah.
But understand that most people don't compete directly against Amazon. They compete directly against someone in the same city.
So do you believe that there's only two paths, or do you think there's maybe a fork in the road?
Was that – are you telling me a fork in the road to be – is this about food?
No. I know you're still dreaming about the Meet You Dallas, but like this is about – do you think that there's two paths, super transactional or incredible – and then path one, incredibly relational, path two. Or do you think that there's a third path?
Well, I think that there is a – I'm a relational kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to put a 0.5 in there, I would put it in humor. Like how much can you converse with the other guy about something other than business? I just did that interview with the lady from Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
And she was extremely professional when we started the thing and was griping about everything. And then I told her that I had visited – I'm probably one of the few people that she's ever interviewed that's been to the Chihuly Museum in Tacoma where they are glassblowers. And all of a sudden she warmed up.
So that's cool.
Yeah, you have to go off subject.
I think there's a third path.
What is the third path,
I Jenny? Think that there are a lot of people who think they're being relational, but actually they're being transactional.
Ooh.
So like there are people that write into us and say, how come he didn't respond to my proposal? We have such a good relationship. Okay, so you think you have a good relationship, yeah. but the customer is perceiving you to be transactional and not relational.
So I'm challenging every diehard that it's not what you think it is. It's what the customer thinks
exactly.
It is. And if they think that you are not valuable and you think that you are valuable, dude, you are not valuable. And that's going to go to any single thing that you can do, but I think we should take it a little bit deeper in this, Jen.
Okay.
I'm wondering how the conversation started and how the person's preparation was perceived by the customer. So they walk in And did they ask the right question? Did they make the right statement? Did they do the right thing? Did they start with their slides or did they start with a conversation?
And, you know, I think what matters is who you're talking to, because there are places in the country that you can go in and open up with a totally relational kind of sale and just build a relationship and talk about each other and mainly them for the first 20 minutes before you even go into the sale. But then you go to a place like New York and people have 20 minutes for the meeting and they're like, what are you doing? We need to get to the business.
Right.
And so what I find myself doing in situations like that, because I come across that a lot with a lot of the people I deal with, is I get right to the point because that's what they want. And then as soon as I know that they're interested, I slow it down and take it back. And I stop talking about selling or anything like that. And I start going relational. But because I've already won them over in a sense with whatever I'm offering and they feel there's going to be value in the conversation, now they're ready to open their conversation and
create
time.
You have to be ready. You have to be ready. When I sold the sales Bible in New York City in 1992, 1993, I asked Adrian Zakheim for a 5-minute meeting, and if he didn't like what I was going to say, throw me out after five. Mm-hmm. Fair enough? Fair enough. So I get in the room and like it's now 30 minutes into the meeting and I – just as an aside to bust his balls, I said, is my 5 minutes up yet? And that created a mutual understanding. That created a dialogue that says, hey, I'm doing what I said I would do. I'm interesting. Keep going.
Yep.
And when he said, wait a minute, let me bring in my sales guy – then I knew.
Right, of course. Of course.
When people bring somebody else into the meeting, that's the kiss of life, not the kiss of money, not the kiss of death. Not like I'll get back to you, send me a proposal, that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just had one of those magic moments.
Oh,
but,
man.
So let's get back to Anthony.
Yes.
I like Anthony. He's a likable guy.
He is. And he's a relational guy.
And he's a business guy. He's a sales guy.
Mm-hmm.
He sits up. He says he writes his own stuff. I respect that.
Yeah.
He gives his own talks. I respect that.
How do you have someone give a talk for you? Isn't that obvious?
You'd be amazed that people have other people go around and speak for them.
Oh, like okay.
Yeah. So, but we're all going to be together at Outbound in Atlanta in
April of next year.
So buy a ticket or two.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Atlanta.
We'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah. I'll be doing my own seminar in Atlanta. And there'll be a link in the show notes for that. But there should also be a link in the show notes for Outbound, because there's going to be a ton of people there. Me and Jen are going to be speaking. But there's a lot of other guys. Jeb Blunt will be there. Ian Arena will be there. Mike Weinberg will be there. Mark Hunter will be there. And his troop of people plus others.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event, and I'm excited to present to everyone, so I hope you show up.
Yeah, damn it. But let's talk about you, diehards. What are you doing right now? What are your obstacles? Put it in our face. Join our Facebook group and put your one obstacle that you want us to talk about in the weeks to come, and we will do it. We'll feature someone who's an expert at it. We'll bring them in. We'll talk to them. We'll challenge them. And we'll give you answers that you need to be able to earn more money. Because we're in a boom right now and you need more boom.
Yeah. Okay. So exactly what he said.
Yeah.
So here's your challenge for this week, guys. Ask yourself, are you being transactional or are you being relational? And how does the customer perceive you to be? So rate yourself about how you perceive yourself to be. Be honest. Only you are looking at this. And then how does the customer perceive you to be? And if it's transactional, what do you need to do to begin to get relational?
And let me throw a reality slap in the face at you. If you think you have a great relationship with somebody, but they ask you to bid and they take the lowest bid, you have a transactional relationship. They may like you as a person, but they ain't buying your stuff.
Yeah.
So there you go with the dose of sell or die.
If you missed an episode this week, make sure you go back and listen to it. But also tune in tomorrow to the best of on Friday. For now, we are out. I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Boom. Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.